Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, what's up? Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Roll Pod, an Alabama sports podcast from Bama 247. I am staff writer Cody Goodwin. I'm here with fellow staff writer Mike Rodak. I feel like it's become, at least this month, Mike, an Alabama basketball podcast, because how many of us would have guessed that at this time of the year we would be talking so much basketball, right, with Alabama getting to the Final Four? Like, I don't know how many people actually had that on their bingo card outside of maybe, you know, the program themselves.
Yeah, no, I mean, they were on the practice court last week in Tuscaloosa, and I was trying to think to myself, I'm like, this is probably the only time this court has ever been used in April in program history. Because typically, you know, this is the first time they've ever really played a game in April, I think, unless I'm missing something. I'm sure it is. So, and then they usually shut it down for a little while before they get back to it over the summer. So yeah, it's uncharted territory. It's different, you know, and now it's still going to go on for another couple weeks here because there's portal news, there's an assistant coach to hire, there's NBA draft decisions to be made. And, you know, we're still going to be talking about this basketball team, you know, really up until June, because even if guys go into the draft, they have until the end of May to declare, to officially stay in it or to come out. And that was the deal last year. Like, you had Charles Bediako's decision came down to the wire, and then you had Javon Quinterly go out of the draft and then go into the portal. You had Grant Nelson, who came out of the draft and then was in the portal and then visited Alabama in, you know, June. So, you know, there's a decent chance here that we're still going to be talking basketball, you know, probably until almost SEC media days for football. And it's kind of what it was last year, at least.
Not bad for a football school, right? So
true.
We're gonna put a bow on Alabama's 23-24 season on today's show. We also are gonna take a look back. I think that's probably where we should probably start this. Looking back at the Final Four loss to UConn, the eventual national champs, UConn. Alabama went down 86-72 on Saturday night. It was the second semifinal of the night. UConn obviously went on to beat Purdue on Monday night. We're recording this on Tuesday morning. Real quick, before we kind of look at some big picture stuff regarding the season, and we'll touch on Nate Oates a little bit, just because I know that his name was linked to the Kentucky job. It sounds like that there was an actual phone call made there. But the game on Saturday, if you would have told Nate Oates that they're playing UConn, if you'd have told Nate Oates at the beginning of the season that you, one, made the Final Four, two, you're playing UConn, who has proven to be one of the more dominant teams statistically, I think, that we've seen, you know, in terms of national champs in men's basketball. And three, that you would be tied with UConn 56-56 about midway through the second half. I think he'd probably take it, right? Like, that's the point I'm trying to make here is that Alabama played a very, very good first 28 minutes of Saturday's game against, you know, what is effectively a buzzsaw of a basketball team. We'll talk about the last 12 minutes later, but they played them as well as anybody has this month and really this year, right? Like, what was kind of your big picture takeaways from the game on Saturday, Mike?
Yeah, I think we went in talking about who do you try to shut down. And, you know, I think we kind of had the idea of, all right, you kind of let Klingon do what he does and, you know, maybe try to shut down everybody else. But really, I guess what their plan was going into it was kind of shut down guys like Tristan Newton, Cam Spencer. You know, they did a pretty good job with Klingon early on. He only had 8 points in the first half, only shot five times, 3 out of 5. only had two rebounds in the first half. It was really, it was Stephon Castle that was the issue for Alabama in the first half. And they didn't really cover him. It was kind of like the UNC game where they decided he wasn't a good enough three-point shooter. And they left him uncovered. And Castle, after the game, said that he thought that was disrespectful. And he scored 13 points in the first half, 2 of 4 three-point shooting, which, you know, 50%, I think you'll take. Wasn't
like he was, like 21, though, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't like he was killing them. But he got to the line, and, you know, that was their biggest player in the first half. And then the second half is when Klingon and then Alex Karabin started hitting threes, and Tristan Newton started hitting threes, and that's when things, you know, unraveled there. But, you know, game plan wise, it seems like they did about the best you can with what they had. And, you know, it still came down to, if you're going to play UConn and you don't have the post player like a Zach Edey, Zach Edey, Purdue still was in the same situation, but then you need to really get your outside shooting, because otherwise UConn's going to force you into a lot of mid-range floater type of stuff. You're going to have to pull up. That's really what I think even Nate said, that UConn forced Alabama into more non-at-the-rim twos than they had all season, just because you can't Mark Sears at 5'11 and three quarters trying to drive against Donovan Klingon and get layups. It's not going to work. And then, you know, so the three-point shooting Alabama-wise was great in the first half. That was 73%. You know, if that was like what they did against Florida in the SEC championship game, or kind of how they were late in the year, it would never have been as close. But the fact that they shot 73% in the first half was really what kept them in it. I think Nate even said to Tracy Wolfson at halftime that that's the only thing they were doing well. But it's just hard to sustain that. And you had to keep it probably in the 60s to really have a chance. Instead, they were 3 of 12 in the second half, and they finished 48%, which is still really good. But again, it's, if you're going to beat UConn offensively, you need to shoot in the 60s from three-point range, and they just weren't able to do that in the second half.
Yeah, and I think to your point about having a reliable big, one of the thoughts that I had, both maybe a little bit more during the second half and then especially after the fact, I know that there's been somewhat of a conversation of like, you know, how good is this team really if Charles Bediako doesn't try his hand at the NBA or enter his name into the draft? And his name surfaced again, in my mind at least, because, you know, not to put this all on one guy who's no longer with the program, but like, as UConn started to run Alabama shooters off the three-point line, it's like, dude, like, it would have been nice if there was like a post presence, like a competent post presence, right? Like, maybe not even so much defensively, but just a guy that can get you a couple of buckets at the rim every now and again to keep from, you know, to keep UConn's guys from running your shooters off the, like, off the 3-point line the rest of the second half. And it's like, you know, Bediako is the first name that pops up, but like, you know, they had a portal window to try to bring in a big guy. And I'm sure that that's probably going to be a point of emphasis this offseason, or at least the development of one of the, you know, recruits that's coming in. Cause I know that they've got, you know, Houston Millett, the shooter from Pepperdine, who, you know, more of a sharpshooter than obviously a big post guy, but that, yeah, that was just one of the thoughts. I think the other thought too, and this thought sunk in a little bit more watching UConn take care of Purdue in the title game, was that I think, again, just didn't watch a ton of Big East basketball. I know UConn was very, very good. I picked them to win my bracket pool. I was very impressed with UConn's guard play and just the ability that they had to guard one-on-one. That obviously, I think, helped them win. That helped them beat Purdue in the title game. But I think that became very apparent in the second half against Alabama, when it's like, okay, you're not going to – there's just not as much space to work with when those guys are in your grill all the time. And so that's, you know, you look at the way UConn was able to pull away, like, they're relentless, and it's because they do a lot of these little things well. Like, all of their guards play defense. Klingon is obviously a problem. And then on top of that, they're just incredibly efficient offensively, that just, you know, it was kind of similar to, you know, back when Alabama lost 3 in a row in December, and the prevailing takeaway, you know, to who was that, Creighton, Purdue, and Arizona. The prevailing takeaway from those three games was just like, look, like Alabama just kind of ran out of gas. They're a little outmanned. It is what it is. They played as well as you could have hoped. Same idea on Saturday against UConn. So a lot of the little things that UConn did well really kind of helped them. I think, what was the term that you used? They're kind of like a python where, you know, yeah, they just squeeze and squeeze and squeeze. And at some point they, you know, the head pops off. So it was impressive. And it's just kind of more or less what we expected in the matchup, I guess. Alabama had to play perfectly to even give themselves a chance. And you mentioned the 3-point shooting. 8 of 11 in the first half, and they still trailed by 4. Like, that just tells you how good this UConn team was.
Yeah, they're just so efficient. You know, that's really the most impressive part about UConn. And I guess to go back to the big man thing, you know, and everybody keeps saying with Bediaka, I think defensively he would have maybe helped against Kling. Offensively, like, Charles Bediaka was not an offensive player. He was good in some lob stuff, like, but to post, put him up in the post and try to have him back down Donovan Kling and score that way, just that's like his biggest weakness. That's probably why he's not, you know, turning into an NBA player quite yet. So I don't know, like, yeah, he would have helped, but
yeah,
I think Grant Nelson playing the five gives him a lot more offensively than Charles Bediaka would. And, you know, there's an opportunity cost. If they had had Charles Bediaka on this roster, those minutes would have been taken away from somebody else. And again, if they play small, then it's going to be Nelson or Stevenson, maybe Pringle. and those guys all bring something different than Bediaka does. So you're losing that, you know, in those minutes. So it's not always as simple as what people might make it out to be, that Bediaka was the difference between them being elite and being where they were. And that, you know, it's an interesting point too, because we saw two teams with dominant big men play in a national championship game. you know, last year, obviously, UConn was there. You know, San Diego State was there in the national championship game last year. Those are both teams that play a little bit slower, just like UConn and Purdue were teams that play a little bit slower. Tempo-wise, UConn was 330th this year. Purdue was 218th. You know, last year, UConn was 204th in tempo. San Diego State was 262nd. And so slower teams with a big man that play very efficient with their guards and don't turn the ball over. I mean, UConn, in terms of turnovers per game, they only had four against Alabama. That was one of the issues for Alabama. Never got the ball in transition. But UConn was 13th in the country in terms of fewest turnovers. And part of that, this is not adjusted for possessions per game, but still, that's really good, even though UConn has fewer possessions. I think Alabama was 178th, which is actually pretty good for how many possessions they play. But, you know, UConn field goal percentage wise, too. I mean, they shot 50% from the field against Alabama, and they, for the season, were fifth in the country at 49.7%. So a team that doesn't turn the ball over and hits more shots, you know, as relative to how many shots they take than pretty much any other team in the country, is that's hard to beat. And it puts you in a spot where if they're not missing shots and if they're not turning the ball over, it's hard for you to get in transition, because otherwise they're just, they're making shots and then you're picking the ball up and their defense is getting set. So that was a problem for Alabama as well. But, you know, there's obviously a lot of good things to like about Nate Oates' system. And he's brought this team as far as he has the last couple of years. Doesn't mean it's the only way to skin a cat. And, you know, we've seen UConn win with a different system, a slower paced system, a more of a post presence offensively. You know, we've seen Alabama get beat by teams like Auburn that played them really well in the post. You know, I think certainly Nate Oates' system has produced a lot of NBA players, and players seem very excited about playing in his system because of how fast-paced it is and the shooting. But then you look at it this year, and it's like, well, Alabama may not have a player drafted, and UConn might have four players drafted, and UConn plays less of an NBA system. So, again, there's not a perfect solution. There's not a perfect path to get to where you want to go. But I think this is the path that Nate Oates is going to stick with. And, you know, we'll just have to see in the future what it gets them. I do agree that upgrading in the post, especially offensively, is going to be a big priority for him in the portal. If they can find that guy, you know, they'll be in better shape for next year.
Yeah. Probably a good time to transition to Alabama season as a whole. Finished 25-12, second consecutive season, if I could talk, that they've won 25 plus games. First time since the 2000, 2001, and then the 2001-02 seasons that they've had back to back 25 plus win seasons. Third Sweet 16 in the last 4 years. They're one of just five schools nationally to do that, and only one of three to have pushed into the Final Four. Was the first Final Four in school history. Little bit of a rocky up and down season, right? Like we talked about their struggles in the non-conference, and it was a tough non-conference schedule, right? And then they you know, took flight during the SEC play. They stumbled heading into the NCAA tournament, and then they flipped the switch and made school history. What is the ultimate takeaway from Alabama's, you know, 23-24 season?
That you can expect the unexpected. And I think there's going to be a belief and a selling point for anything that happens in future seasons that look what happened last season. You know, so same thing where, you know, you lose, I forget what exactly they're not. It mostly hasn't been set yet, but they'll play Arizona and Birmingham next year. I'm sure they're going to play some other good teams. Let's say they lose those next year. Well, then Nate Oates can say, well, we lost three of those games last year and we were in the Final Four. They go into SEC play and they go on the road to who knows is coaching Kentucky next year and they lose big again, or they go on the road to Tennessee, or they go on the road to Auburn and they lose big, or they go on the road to Florida and they lose big. Nate Oates can say, look at last year. Look what happened last year. They go to the SEC tournament in Nashville next year. They lose in the first game. Nate Oates can say, look what we did last year. You know, so that's it's a great selling point, I think, to get your players to believe, even if it's not the same team and it's not going to be the same team, but there's going to be a decent number of players left. And you can always kind of point back to what happened this year as belief, as optimism, as motivation, that no matter how things go, and of course you still have to make the tournament, like that's still part of it, but no matter how things go, you still have the opportunity in March to make some noise, with the caveat that nothing's ever guaranteed either. Like, you could do all those things and, you know, one and done from the SEC tournament, and then you could go and be one and done in the NCAA tournament. That's still possible too. And you know, it's a case of Alabama's three Sweet 16 teams, probably the worst of those three teams, talent wise and record wise and all that, was this one, and this team went the farthest. So that's, you know, kind of speaks to how March goes in college basketball. And you know, again, you never know. And I think that's something where Nate Oates in November, December, January, February of next year can say, let's just worry about how we're playing in March, because that's what's most important.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said there about, you know, you making the point that next year's team's probably going to look quite a bit different from this year's team. Well, this year's team looked quite a bit different from last year's team, right? When they had two top 20 NBA draft picks with Brandon Miller and Noah Clowney. They lost a couple other dudes to the portal. In all, they lost five of their top six scorers from last season when they won 31 games, when they swept the SEC, when they were the number one overall seed. And Oates went out and replaced a lot of that production with a bunch of mid-major guys. And like you said, like they got further. Like that's in some ways, like that is one, you know, the sport of basketball can change very, very quickly if you tap into the portal correctly. And then in the case of Nate Oates, like if you bring in the proper personnel with your system, things will work out swimmingly. Like sometimes you just may not miss a beat. But two, it also, I think, speaks to, you know, his ability to coach. You know, and give credit to him, his staff, and, you know, the Bamalytics department, right, for bringing in the guys that they wanted specifically to fit this system. And, you know, it's kind of centered the offense around Mark Sears. And we saw a little bit of that depth through March, right? I mean, you think back to, you know, how did they beat Grand Canyon? Mo Diabate jumped off the bench and scored 9 straight points. How did they beat North Carolina? Grant Nelson, right? Just 24-12. How did they get through Clemson after losing to Clemson in the regular season? Nick Pringle and Jaren Stevenson played out of their minds. You know, and they kind of needed some of that magic, I think, against UConn. They didn't exactly get it. I thought Grant Nelson played a great game. I thought Pringle had some good hustle plays, but Stevenson wasn't there. Mark Sears gave them more than I think they probably asked for. And, you know, sometimes you just run into a buzzsaw. But, you know, there, if I remember double checking this stat offensively, like they were tremendous, right? 10 games with 100+ points. I think they were just the second team in the last 14 years to average 90+ a game. I think Gonzaga did it a couple years ago, but those are the only two teams in the last 14 years. Cause then after that, you get to those VMI teams that were just lighting up the scoreboard, you know, that 07, 08, 09, 10. I thought it was really, really impressive what they were able to do. You know, they took advantage of an advantageous draw. I think you can say that much as well, which kind of speaks to the volatility of March. But I think overall, like this, you know, and I was talking to, you know, our recruiting guy, Brett, who was out here with us in Phoenix. You know, you mentioned the whole, like, you know, when they hit slumps next year, if they go 0-1 at the SEC tournament, if they struggle through the non-conference schedule, you can always point to March and say, hey, look, we figured it out last year. Kind of polished off the recruiting pitch too, to be like, yo, we took a football school to the Final Four, you know, come help us finish the race, right? Like, come help us win it, right? Like, that's, I don't know. Like, in a lot of ways, I think this season was probably frustrating, but then you look at the end result and it's hard to call it anything other than a success because of what they were able to do and how they were able to finish.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's it's something where there's so much volatility, and that's the thing. Like, you can point back to it. There's no guarantees though in the future. And they're still gonna have to rebuild their roster. You know, maybe at least part of their coaching staff. Obviously Austin Kalonch is already gone. You know, maybe there's another surprise move or something. You know, you never really know with that. And you still have to trot a team out there next year and just see how it comes together. And some years it's worked. I mean, some years it hasn't. You know, the team 2 years ago, there's a lot of hope for, and they beat Baylor early and they beat Gonzaga early and all that. And it just didn't turn into anything. So every year is a little bit different. And I think as much as Nate Oates, yes, we'll probably stress the here's the belief system, it might also behoove him to say this is a fresh slate and what we did last year doesn't have any bearing on this or what's going to happen next year. Because I think there will be a lot of talk this offseason and going into next season about, like you said, finishing the job, getting to the next step, getting over the hump. My guess is that Nate will probably try to deflect that a little bit and try to get them to focus on just getting better in November, December, focusing on the next game, all that. Because that could be a lot of pressure on players to be like, well, we were a Final Four team last year, now we should be a national championship team. And that probably doesn't even matter when you're playing games in November, December. So that's kind of the flip side of that. And, you know, I think some of those records are good, you know, the 100-point games and being the all-time leading scoring team in Alabama history and all that. But, you know, UConn just did everything really well. They were the number one offense in the country, but it wasn't as if, like, they're putting up 120 points every game. You know, they're just a very well-balanced, like, sound technical team that did a lot of things really well. And just that's what it took for UConn to be as good as they are. And so you can have the greatest offense in the world, but as Nate said after the game on Saturday night, like their defense needs to get better. Their defense wasn't good enough for 40 minutes against UConn is what he said. So
yeah.
Still, and I think
you're right. Yeah. And you know, you look at some of their better teams, or, you know, the teams that swept the SEC, for example, like they did that with elite defense. I will say though, like, you know, Oates, we've talked to him plenty this season because I feel like he's been preaching and asking for more defense all the way through the course of the season. And so, you know, I forget who it was specifically that asked him, just like, you know, when did you kind of realize that defense was going to be a problem? And he was basically like, when Bediako committed to going to the NBA, and you look at the roster and what they were able to do portal wise. And, you know, I think he knew pretty early that post play defensively was probably going to be an issue, and maybe even a little bit offensively as well. But it probably speaks to Oates and his staff, and again, the Bamalytics crew, that, you know, they probably recognized it early enough that they were able to craft an offense that put up 100 points a third of the time, right? Or that average 90 points a game. So I think, you know, there's something to be said there, and it kind of makes you curious, you know, as we follow the roster, you know, kind of up and down, like who leaves, who comes in, you know, what do they look like this summer? Be kind of interesting, you know, if we ever get to talk to Oates this summer or throughout the offseason, like, you know, picking his brain a little bit, like, what are the early returns with some of the summer workouts? Where do you think the strengths are going to be? Like, are you going to have to score 100 points 10 times during the season and average 90 a game next season? Or will there be a little bit more balance, right? Like, and so, you know, if there's one thing I've learned in covering this team this year, it's that Nate Oates is very, very good about finding the strength of his team and then just spamming that button over and over and over and over again. You know, because I think they probably knew pretty early in the scout, they're not stopping UConn. Can they keep pace with them? And I know he made the comment that, like, he doesn't want to get into 120 to 118 game, but, you know, when he said that, my eyes went up, or, like, you know, I perked my eyebrows up, and I'm just like, you can try it. Like, you know, like, cause at that point you're, you know, and I know this is a little bit of an exaggeration, because it's, you know, if it's 120 to 118, it's a close game. Like, UConn hadn't played a close game all month. Like, you may as well take your chances if that's the way you think you can do it. And, you know, for the first half, it looked like it was trending that way until, again, the last, you know, 10, 12 minutes, UConn, you know, just kind of grabbed hold of the game and ran away with it. But I don't know. A lot of credit, I think, to Nate Oates, just for, you know, what he was able to get out of this team, how, you know, all that he was able to pull out of this team. And it makes you curious, you know, once the roster kind of settles, you know, over the next month or two, what is it going to look like? And what is he going to cook up with this summer to get ready for next season? Because there's a very good chance it could be a totally different team.
Well, yeah, they played the game too slow, was really what Nate said. I mean, after the game, was 64 possessions wasn't enough. I mean, Alabama, according to the box score, at least had zero fast break points. UConn had two.
They had averaged 72 possessions through the first four NCAA tournament game, and then played. Right. I think it was, according to the box score, I know Nate keeps different stats from us, but according to the box score, they had 60 possessions clean, 30 in each half. So,
yeah, you're right. Yeah, 61 is what I'm seeing right now. I mean, Depends on how you count some of that stuff, but yeah, it's, that's a low number, and that's, like, they did not have a problem with playing UConn too fast and getting into a transition game too much with them. That was not their issue. It was UConn, as we've said, kind of squeezing them to death there at the end. And yeah, offensive rebounds and all that, like, UConn just does it really well, really cleanly, and that's why they are where they are.
Yeah, and when you're playing 12 fewer possessions, and I think they averaged like 1.18 points per possession, like, that adds up to 14 points. What was the difference in the game? So I'm not saying that was all it, but, like, clearly that played quite a role. People are clearly taking notice of what Nate Oates is doing here at Alabama, a football school that now has a very proud basketball program, or at least a budding basketball program, so much that when Kentucky decided to – I don't know that Kentucky actually did anything. When John Calipari decided to leave Kentucky to go to Arkansas, which kind of shook up SEC basketball world this past week, Nate Oates got a call, right? Like, he was on the short list for a lot of people for Kentucky to call. And it sounds like, based on, you know, some of the insiders that were here, that Nate got a call from Kentucky, ultimately turned them down. He had the post on Monday night before the championship game that kind of confirmed that, like, hey, I'm staying here. Nate Oates published his statement that said he's staying. Greg Byrne then followed up with, like, hey, we're glad he's staying. We need to support him. Yay, Alabama, NIL, all that stuff. It's kind of like we're living in a world now where the Alabama basketball coach is turning down Kentucky, which maybe says a little bit more about where both programs are. But would you have thought that when Nate Oates got hired, what, 5 years ago?
It's interesting how things have gone too, because, you know, Kentucky was obviously, especially at that time, was considered a premier job and have been for a while. And, you know, you can probably make the argument that they still are, you know, salary wise and fan support wise and all that. But it seemed much less obvious in this case, you know, for different reasons too. I mean, Kentucky, you know, I think the $18 million, even though they're not paying Calipari to leave, is still a financial obstacle. It's doable, much more doable in Aaron, but it's still a consideration.
Especially for Kentucky basketball. Like, I know they gave Cal a lifetime contract, and, you know, I think his buyout was like $34 million or something like that. But, like, if Nate wanted to be in Lexington, the $18 million buyout would not have been an issue.
We'll put right. It that way. Right. Yeah. And it's just a conglomeration of factors. And I know people are kind of, there's different reporting on different ends of this. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's not the right job for Nate right now. You know, it's not to say that Nate's going to be at Alabama forever. Like, that would still surprise me if he's 70 years old and still coaching them. Like, that would be surprising. But, you know, I think Kentucky probably has other options too. It's not like Nate Oates is the one shining option, their only hope. Like, I think Scott Drew would be a really good coach for them, and he's done really well at Baylor, and probably try to take a swing at Dan Hurley. You know, didn't sound like that one anywhere. And, you know, maybe they'll try to take a swing at Jay Wright, or, you know, I think Billy Donovan's been kind of bandied about, and that doesn't seem like it has any chance happening either. So, you know, it's not like Nate's like the one shining possibility for him. And, you know, Kentucky, if they don't want to pay the $18 million, certainly had a lot of other options. So it just wasn't the right combination of factors to get that to work out. I don't think that means that Nate Oates didn't even consider it for a moment, because I think there's, again, some reporting that they, you know, there might have been at least a conversation there. And, you know, I think the timing of kind of the announcement almost 24 hours later suggests that there was, you know, a day of talk there. They had a chance really in the morning to put something out and say, there's no shot of this happening. If Nate Oates woke up that morning and was like, yeah, I'm not going to be the Kentucky coach, they could have said something in the morning. The fact that it took until 8 o'clock was a little bit suggestive. So, you know, it's water under the bridge at this point, because obviously he's not going, but it's not black and white. I think sometimes people like, oh, there's no chance that Nate Oates was going to go to Kentucky, or, you know, that was Kentucky's only option. They wanted him more than anybody else. Like, I think it's probably in the middle, and there's a little bit of a dance in terms of what information gets out and who wants to look a certain way about whether they were passed up or whether they turned it down, or, you know, there's different strategies there on both sides. So here we are for Kentucky, and they're still looking for their coach. I think at the end of the day, it's probably going to be Scott Drew. And then, you know, for Nate Oates, it's a situation where, you know, I think he's certainly happy here now. You know, I think his daughter being here in school probably is part of that. I think the arena part of it, I don't think matters too much. I think people kind of hate that. I don't think that matters to a coach. I think some of the behind the scenes amenities for players probably matters more. And that's something even Greg Byrne referenced in his statement about, you know, paying some money to create a development space for players. That probably matters more to him, because that's what they use every single day. The arena, they only use during games. You know, and then there's the Michigan State angle. That's really the next big shoe to drop in Nate Oates' career, is when Tom Izzo retires. What does Nate Oates do if Michigan State comes calling, which I think they certainly will, given his ties to that area? You know, it's Tom Izzo knows him pretty well. I think the biggest question is, can you win at Michigan State in this current era, like Michigan State did 20 years ago, you know, under Tom Izzo? Is that a school where the coach probably made the job a little bit better than it really was? Izzo at Michigan State, I know people will look at Jay Wright at Villanova as maybe elevating that program a little bit beyond its means, if you will. And is Michigan State able to compete NIL-wise with other programs in the year 2025, 2026, 2027, whenever Izzo happens to retire? But I think it's certainly will be something that Nate probably considers a little bit more strongly than a Kentucky job. I think the NBA one day might come calling him, and that's something he'll have to think about. I think TV networks might come calling him one day, and I think he'd be great on TV. And Jay Wright certainly is great on TV, and you can make an easier living doing it that way. So, you know, there's going to be options down the road for Nate, but I think right now he's very locked in and he's very hungry on winning a national title, just like he was very locked in on trying to get to the Final Four, and he did. So that's the immediate priority, but it's hard to predict what's going to happen 3, 4, 5, 6 years down the line.
Yeah. And Alabama doesn't have to worry about that for now. So the extension, I believe, was through the 28-29 season. You know, and Nate Oates seems committed to being here for, you know, the majority of that, if not all of that. So I think Alabama basketball fans can rest easy that their guy is staying with their team. And like we've mentioned before, it's going to be interesting to see what next year's team looks like. And, you know, now that they've gotten over the hump of the Final Four, you know, how does that change things moving forward in terms of, you know, what teams they're able to put together? And, you know, can they get over the final hump and get to the last game of the season? And then when they get there, can they win it? So be interesting to see. Didn't think we'd be talking about this, you know, talking about Alabama as a basketball school, but I did find these comparisons fun. Both Alabama football and Alabama basketball reached the national semifinals of their respective sport. They lost in fairly competitive games. And then the teams that beat them, Michigan and UConn, won the final decisively. So Spider-Man meme with both the Alabama football and basketball programs pointing at each other because very similar seasons. Although basketball season was a little bit more of a roller coaster just because inventory. Football was a roller coaster in its own right, I guess, because they ended up winning like, what, 10 straight games? So funny comparisons between the two. But hey, it was a pretty fun sports calendar season, and it's not done yet because we've got spring football with A-Day coming up this week, so we'll probably be back later this week to preview some of that. But any other final thoughts, Mike, on the 23-24 Alabama men's basketball season before we sign off?
No, it was really interesting, unexpected year. I think it for a lot of people, it's going to be considered the best season in Alabama history, even without an SEC title, an SEC regular season title. And it all kind of comes down to that North Carolina game. That was the difference, I think. I think more people expected them to beat Clemson. Obviously, people expected them to beat Charleston and Grand Canyon. It was the North Carolina game that is going to be remembered more than any other out of this season. You know, and that was the difference between them being a team that got knocked out in the Sweet 16 and a team that made the Final Four, and the margin was thin. Like, North Carolina was up by 3 with 1 minute left or 2 minutes left, whatever it was. And that's just what it takes sometimes. And it's a much different legacy, and it's a much different conversation. Imagine if they had lost that game, and then we're talking about, you know, Alabama can't get over the hump. They keep losing in Week 16, and why did they extend Nate Oates? And it's a completely different conversation now. The margin is not always that big. Even the Grand Canyon game. I mean, they were losing late in the Grand Canyon game.
Imagine they were down 3 with 6 minutes to go against Grand Canyon. They were down 19-13 to Charleston the first 10 minutes of that.
Imagine if they had lost either of those games. Much, much different conversation. But as I think I wrote before the NCAA tournament, a lot can change in a short period of time. And it most certainly did with this team.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there was a lot of fans that would have been happy that they took advantage of a good draw to get to the second weekend. And then everything after that is just kind of like, dang, man, like that, like, you know, I don't know. The fans that I knew and met and have talked to, pretty thrilled that they even got to LA. And then just, you know, over the moon that they were able to finish the season in Phoenix. I know they ended up losing to UConn, but hey, the fact that they got there for the first time ever, pretty magical stuff. So that's all we've got today. One heck of a basketball season. Was very entertaining to be on the road following this team for the last 3 weeks. But I don't know about you, Mike, but I'm ready to get home and sleep in my bed for a few days. So
yeah, you've been doing a lot more than I have. So I commend you on your being a road warrior.
We'll be back later this week. We'll probably get Mike and Scarborough back and do a three-man weave to preview A-Day. We'll do that either Thursday or Friday. We've got another few media availabilities for the last few practices for Alabama, so we'll touch base on that later this week. In the meantime, though, be sure to rate and review the show wherever you listen to your podcast, Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, even our Bama 247 YouTube page. Subscribe to Bama 247 and 247 Sports. I believe if you hurry, we're still running a Final Four special, 60% off. Absolutely the perfect time to get in on that because we've got some postseason basketball content coming this week, as well as a bunch of spring football stuff. And then the following week, we're going to have a bunch of post-spring football stuff. We're going to have to keep tabs on the transfer portal for both men's basketball and football. There is not a better time to join Bama 247, so please do that now. As always, appreciate you guys listening. Appreciate Mike, as always, for his time, and we will talk to you all again soon.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.